Sheila Fitzpatrick has over 20 years of experience running her own firm as a data protection attorney. She also serves as outside counsel for NetApp as their chief privacy officer, where she provides expertise in global data protection compliance, cybersecurity regulations, and legal issues associated with cloud computing and big data. In this series, Sheila will be sharing her expertise on GDPR, PCI compliance, and the data security landscape.
Yeah, Sheila, I'm very impressed by your bio and the fact that you've actually dealt with some of these DPAs, the EU data protection authorities that we've been writing about. I know there's been, so the GDPR will go into effect in 2018, and I'm just wondering what's the sort of the biggest change for companies, I guess they call them data controllers, in dealing with DPAs under the law? Is there something that jumps to mind first?
Thank you for the compliment, by the way. I live and breathe data privacy. This is the stuff I love. GDPR, is certainly the biggest overhaul in 20 years when it comes to the implementation of new data privacy regulations, much more restrictive than what we've seen in the past. And most companies are struggling because they thought what was previously in place was strict. There's a couple of things that stick out when it comes to mind for GDPR. When you look at the roles of the data controller versus the data processor, in the past, many of the data processors, especially when you talk about third-party outsourcing companies and in particular cloud providers, have pushed sole liability for data privacy compliance down to their customers, basically saying, you decide what you're going to put in our environment, you have responsibility for the privacy and security aspects. We basically accept minimal responsibility. Usually it's around physical security. But GDPR now is going to put very comprehensive and very well-defined regulations and obligations in place for data processors as well, saying that they can no longer flow responsibility for privacy compliance down to their customers. And if they're going to be oftentimes cloud providers will say, we will comply with the laws in countries where we have our processing centers. And that's not sufficient under the new laws, because if they have a data processing center, say in the UK, but they're processing the data of a German citizen or a Canadian citizen or someone from Asia Pacific, Australia, New Zealand, they're now going to have to comply with the laws in those countries as well. They can't just push it down to their customers. The other part of GDPR that is quite different, and it's one of the first times it's really going to be put in place, is that it doesn't just apply to companies that have operations within the EU. It is going to basically any company, regardless of where they're located and regardless of whether or not they have a presence in the EU, if they have access to the personal data of any EU citizen, they will have to comply with the regulations under GDPR. And that's a significant change. And then the third one being the sanction. The sanction can be 20 million euro or 4% of your global annual revenue, whichever is higher. That's a substantial change as well.
Right. So those are big changes. So you're referring to, I think, what they call territorial scope. They don't have to necessarily have an office or an establishment in the EU, as long as they're collecting data. We're really referring to social media and sort of web commerce or e-commerce.
Absolutely, but it's going to apply to any company. So even if, for instance, you say, well, we don't have any, we're just a U.S. domestic company, but if you have employees in your environment that hold EU citizenship, you will have to protect their data in accordance with GDPR. You can't say, well, they're working in the U.S., therefore U.S. law applies. That's not going to be the case if they know that the individual holds citizenship in the EU.
We're talking about employees, or?
Could be employees.
Anybody. Are you saying?
Anybody.
Oh, okay. Isn't that interesting? Well, one question about this expanded territorial scope is how are they going to enforce this against, let's say, U.S. companies, or not just U.S., but any company that is doing business but doesn't necessarily have an office or an establishment?
Well, it can be. See, what happens under GDPR is that any individual can file a complaint with the courts in basically any jurisdiction. They can file it within at the EU level. They can file it within the countries where they hold their citizenship. They can file it now with the U.S. courts, although the U.S. courts, and part of that is tied to the new privacy shield, which is a joke. I mean, I think that'll be invalidated fairly quickly, is, you know, with the whole Redress Act, it does allow EU citizens to file complaints with the U.S. courts to protect their personal data in accordance with EU laws.
So, I mean, just to follow through, if I came from, let's say, the U.K. into the U.S., and was doing transactions, say credit card transactions, my data would be protected under EU law?
Well, if the company knows that you're an EU citizen, they're not going to necessarily know. So in some cases, if they don't know, they're not going to be held accountable. But if they absolutely do know, then they will have to protect that data in accordance with UK law or EU law. Well, not if the UK. If Brexit goes through, they have to, EU law won't matter. The UK Data Protection Act will take precedence.
Wow. You know, it's just really fascinating how the data protection and privacy now is just so important, right, with the new GDPR for everybody, not just EU companies.
Yeah, and it's always been important. It's just the U.S. has a totally different attitude. I mean, the U.S. has the least restrictive privacy laws in the world. So, you know, for individuals that have really never worked or lived outside of the U.S., the mindset is very much the U.S. mindset, which is, right, you know, the business takes precedence, where everywhere else in the world, the fundamental right to privacy takes precedence over everything.
Okay. We're getting a lot of questions from our customers about the new breach notification rule in the GDPR. I was wondering if you could talk about what are the most important things you would do when you discover a breach. I mean, if you could prioritize it in any way, or what would you? How would you advise a customer about how to have like a breach response program in a GDPR context?
Yeah, well, first and foremost, you do need to have in place before a breach even occurs an incident response team that's not made up of just the IT, because normally organizations have an IT focus. You need to have a response team that includes IT, your chief privacy officer. If the person, normally a CPO would sit in legal, if it doesn't sit in legal, you want a legal representative in there as well. You need someone from PR, communications, that can actually be the public-facing voice for the company. You need to have someone within finance and risk management that sits on there. So the first thing to do is make sure you have that group in place that goes into action immediately. Secondly, you need to determine what data has potentially been breached, even if it hasn't, because under GDPR, it's not, you know, previously it's been, if there has been definitely been a breach that could harm an individual. The new definition is if it's likely to affect an individual. That's totally different than if the individual could be harmed. So you need to determine, okay, what data has been breached and does it impact an individual? So as opposed to if company-related information was breached, there's a different process you go through. Individual employee or customer data has been breached, the individual, if it could affect them. So that's pretty much anything. That's a very broad definition. If someone gets a hold of their email address, that could affect them. Someone could email them who's not authorized to email them. So you have to launch into that investigation right away and then classify the data that has been, any intrusion into the data, what that data is classified as. Is it personal data? Is it personal sensitive data? And then rank it based on, is it likely to affect an individual? Is it likely to impact an individual? Is it likely to harm an individual? So there could be three levels. Based on that, what kind of notification? So if it's likely to affect or impact an individual, you would have to let them know. If it's likely to harm an individual, you absolutely have to let them know and the data protection authorities know.
And the DPA, right? So if I'm a consumer, the threshold is, in other words, it's a company holding my data, I'm not an employee, the threshold is likely to harm or likely to affect?
Likely to affect.
Affect, okay. So that's a little more generous, right, in terms of?
Right. Okay. That has changed. So it's put more accountability on a company because you know that a lot of companies have probably had breaches and have never reported them. So because they go, well, you know, there was no Social Security number or national identification number or financial data. It was just their name and their address and their their home phone numbers or their cell phone. And the definition previously has been, well, I can't really harm them. We don't need to let them know. And then all of a sudden, people's names show up on these mailing lists, and they're starting to get unsolicited marketing.
Right.
And they can't determine whether or not, how did they get that? Was it based on a breach, or is it based on trolling the internet and gathering information and then brokers selling that information? And that's the other thing. Brokers are going to be impacted by the new GDPR, because in order to sell their lists, they have to have explicit consent of the individual to include their name on a list that they're going to sell to companies.
Right. So it's quite consumer friendly compared to what we have in the U.S.
Yes.
There's sort of new rules about what they call sensitive data, mm-hmm. and if you're going to process certain classes of sensitive data, you need approval from the. I think at some point you may need approval from the DPA. Do you know what I'm referring to? I think it's the.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, that's always been in place in most of the member states. So if you look at the member states that have the more restrictive data privacy laws, like Germany, France, Italy, Spain, Netherlands, they've always had the requirement that you have to register with the data protection authorities and in order to collect and transfer outside of the country of origination any sensitive data, it did require approval. The difference now is that any personal data that you collect on an individual, whether it's an employee, whether it's a customer, whether it's a supplier, you have to obtain unambiguous and freely given explicit consent. Now, this is any kind of data, and that includes sensitive data.
Right.
Now, the one difference with the new law is that there are just a few categories of what are truly defined as sensitive data. And it's not what we think of as sensitive data. We think of like birth date, maybe gender. That information is certainly considered sensitive. That's personal data under EU law and everywhere else in the world, so it has to be treated to a high degree of privacy. But the categories that are political or religious affiliation, you know, medical history, criminal convictions, social issues, and trade union membership, that's a subset that's considered highly sensitive information in Europe. To collect and transfer that information is going to now require explicit approval, not only from the individual, but from the DPA, separate from the registrations you've done.
So I think I'm referring to what they call the impact assessments.
Privacy impact assessments have to be conducted now any time, and we've always, every time I've worked with any company, I've implemented privacy impact assessments. They are now required under the new GDPR for any collection of any personal data.
But sensitive data, I think they talked about like DNA data and bio-related data.
Oh, that, no. So what you're doing, so now I see what you're saying. No, what happened under GDPR, they have expanded the definition of personal data.
Okay.
And
right.
So that's not the sensitive, that's expanding the definition of personal data to include biometric information, genetic information, and location data. That data was never included under the definition of personal data because the belief was, well, you can't really tie that back to an individual. They have found out since the original laws went into place that, yes, you can indeed tie that back to an individual. So that is now included in the definition.
It's sort of catching up a little bit with technology.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But what part of what GDPR did was it went from being a law around processing of personal data to a law that really moves you into the digital age. So it's anything about tracking or monitoring or tying different aspects or elements of data together to be able to identify a person. So it's really entering into the digital age. So it's trying to catch up with new technology.
I have one more question on the GDPR subject. There's some mention in the law about sort of outside bodies can certify.
Well, they're talking about having private certifications and privacy codes. Right now, those are not in place. The highest standard you have right now for privacy law is what's called binding corporate rules. And so companies that have their binding corporate rules in place, there's only less than 100 companies worldwide that have those. And actually, I've written them for a number of companies, including NetApp, has binding corporate rules in place. That is the gold standard. If you have BCRs, you are 95% compliant with GDPR. But the additional certifications that they're talking about aren't in place yet.
So it may be possible to get a certification from some outside body, and that would somehow help prove your, I mean, if an incident happens and the DPA looks into it, having that compliance should help a little bit in terms of any kind of enforcement actions, or am I mistaken?
Yes, it certainly will once they come up with what those are, unless, like I said, you have binding corporate rules. But right now, I mean, if you're thinking like something like a trustee, no, that there is no trustee certification. Trustee is a U.S. certification for privacy, but it's not a certification for GDPR.
All right. Well, thank you so much. I mean, these are questions that, I mean, it's just great to talk to an expert and to get some, you know, more perspective on this.
Stay tuned for an upcoming PCI Q&A with Sheila Fitzpatrick.